ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 20, Conversations Between Maitreya and Vidura, text 5. Tayo Sangvadato Sutta Pavritta Yamalakata Apo Ganga Ivaga Gnir Hare Param Bhujashraya Tayo Sangvadato Sutta Pavritta Yamalakata Apo Ganga Ivaga Gnir Hare Param Bhujashraya Tayo Sambhadato Sutta Pavritta Yamalakata Apo Ganga Ivagagni Hare Param Bhujashraya Tayo While the two, Maitreya and Vidura, Sambhadato, were conversing. Sutta, O Sutta, Pavritta arose. He, certainly, Amala, spotless, Kata, narrations, Apa, waters. Ganga, of the river Ganges. Iva, like Agagni, vanquishing all sins. Hare, of the Lord. Hara Ambuja, the lotus feet. Ashraya, taking shelter. Shonaka inquired about the conversation between Vidura and Maitreya. There must have been many narrations of the spotless pastimes of the Lord. The hearing of such narrations is exactly like bathing in the water of the Ganges, for it can free one from all sinful reactions. Purport. The water of the Ganges is purified because it pours forth from the lotus feet of the Lord. Similarly, Bhagavad Gita is as good as the waters of the Ganges, because it is spoken from the mouth of the Supreme Lord. So it is with any topic on the pastimes of the Lord or the characteristics of his transcendental activities. The Lord is absolute. There's no difference between his words, his perspiration, or his pastimes. The water of the Ganges, the narrations of his pastimes, and the words spoken by him are all on the absolute platform, and thus taking shelter of any of them is equally good. Srila Rupa Goswami has enunciated that anything in relationship with Krishna is on the transcendental platform. If we can dovetail all our activities in relationship with Krishna, then we do not stand on the material platform, but always on the spiritual platform. Om agena timidandasya agenanjana shalapaya chakshun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasavi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Shonaka Rishi is inquiring about the conversation between Vidura and Maitreya. Devotees of the Lord are not interested in ordinary conversations. People are always talking about something in this world, in case you haven't noticed. Part of being human is to talk about things, to be sociable with at least one person. That's why everybody likes friends, family, companions, to talk about things. The ordinary talk of this world is called Gramya Katha, village talk. Of course, now you'd have to change that to like city talk, because most people live in cities. As much as they talk, they're not satisfied. You can remember that about conversing and talking. It did not satisfy you. Therefore, people try to accompany their conversations with intoxication. They go to pubs. They go to cafes. And they try to combine the conversations with caffeine or alcohol or marijuana, hoping that in this way the conversations will be sweeter. Also, we've described the two types of materialistic conversation so much treasured in this world. Anyone remembers those two types? Yes? Pipe talk and pillow talk. These are the treasured types of katha in the material society. Pipe talk, you know, pass the pipe and philosophize while you're smoking your nonsense things. Pass the pipe and discuss the meaning of life. It seems so deep and significant when you're engaging in pipe talk. It seems like your conversation, your dialogue is crucial for the existence of the world. People very much treasure pipe talks, gather with their friends, you know, late at night, early in the morning, just go on passing the pipe and talking about life. And it seems so important. And then the other type of katha in this world, which is so much cherished, is pillow talk. When the man and the woman are resting their head on the pillow, and then they speak of each other. They speak of their commitment. They speak of life. And so many inflated words are spoken. Yes, I will be with you always. I couldn't imagine anyone more wonderful than you. You're the best thing that ever happened to me. The pillow talk. And this is very much appreciated by the conditioned souls. Because everyone's hungry for relationship, because they're part of Krishna. They're hungry for relationship with Krishna. Part of being in the illusory energy is that you seek to satisfy your hankering for relationship with Krishna. You seek that amongst conditioned souls, deluded persons. Indeed, this world would be a much better place without pipe talk and pillow talk. But the conditioned souls in Kali Yuga are madly addicted to these things. As devotees of the Lord, we're also interested in conversations. But we're interested in the conversations between the most high-level personalities, the most sublime personalities, who are beyond the reach of material nature, who are beyond the clutches of Maya. We're interested in hearing their talks. Therefore, a devotee can't be satisfied by Gramya Katha, the village talk on the pillow or as the pipe is being passed. Now, why should we listen to that rubbish when we have access to the conversations between the greatest personalities? That is why reading Srimad Bhagavatam will immunize you against the contamination of illusory conversation. Once you take an interest in what Vidura and Maitreya are speaking of, or Shonaka Rishi and Sutta Goswami, or Prichit Maharaj and Shukadeva, You can no longer take seriously talks of the material world. Just like New Zealanders don't take weather reports seriously. Similarly, devotees can't take seriously the conversations of ordinary people. You know what it's like, you all engaged in mundane conversation. Half of the conversation is the projection of your own ego, right? You want to be noticed, right? You want to say something that seems to be significant and witty, and that will draw attention to yourself. That's half the conversation, always projecting your ego. And then the other half of the conversation is some kind of informational content. But half of every conversation is your desire to project your ego and manipulate. You're hoping your words will accomplish a purpose for your pleasure. And then included in that half, which is for your own purposes, is the expression of hurt and pain. You want to get that off your chest to someone. So the information in the conversation is actually not that important. It's mainly, the conversation is mainly a platform for you to project your ahankar, your false ego. That's why it's so fatiguing to hear mundane conversation. It actually tires you out. When you go to visit your parents, visit your family, your material relations, you all get that feeling. Yes? It gets very fatiguing after a while. Yes? You try it, Gopi. It's fatiguing, yes? Because every conversation is just a self-projection. The poor conditioned soul is seeking satisfaction through projecting the false ego, and therefore you talk. And indeed, of all the senses, the tongue is the most difficult to control, because through the tongue you project your ego. No matter what you talk about, you want to draw attention to yourself. You want to be known as an important person, a person who speaks significant words. You can be in the smallest town in New Zealand, but still your tongue has that program. You remember Steve just sitting around in Whanganui and the tongue wagging and just trying to draw attention to yourself, actually. Trying to cover over your hurts and pains. Hoping someone will take you seriously and realize how great you are. Just by the sound your tongue is vibrating. Yes? Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that of all the senses, the tongue is the most difficult to control. Devotees, as I told you before, they were once discussing with Srila Prabhupada, and he asked them, what is the most difficult sense to control? And the devotees replied, well, it must be the sense for acting in lusty affairs. And Prabhupada said, no, the tongue is the most difficult sense to control. Even more than the genitals, it's the tongue. The tongue just loves to wag, and it likes to taste strange things. You may not notice how the tongue likes to taste so many strange things because you're always having ready access to prasad here. But maybe you've noticed when you've gone home to visit your parents or something and you didn't have the Gaur Yoga prasad all the time. You notice what happens to your tongue? Anyone ever notice that? You didn't notice? Or you haven't gone away that long? Of course, you can always cook for yourself. That's probably what you all do, right? But I never had time to learn to cook, so if I ever go visit my material relations, it's like 2 days of just austerity. Because I only see them like once every 2 years. So. In order to keep them happy. Recently, just a couple weeks ago, I was talking with my mother on the phone, and she tried she's a real powerful lady, so she tried, she had a real ace card up her sleeve. She said, "You know, your grandmother, who passed away some years ago, we've never told you this, but she left you some money specifically for when you wanted to start life again." Think about it. The money is there particularly for you to start a new life. Think about it. Come home. Come home. Start a new life. The money is there for that purpose only. I said, "Come on, Mom, give me a break, you know. What am I supposed to do with them? What am I supposed to do with, you know, what do I need? What are my needs? My needs are so small." I said, "If I was going to be tempted by that proposal, I would have done it years ago in my 20s. Now I'm 54. What can I enjoy, you know?" "It's too late." I told her, "It's too late. I'm over the hill." "So what if you gave me, you gave me a lot of money, what can I do with it for myself?" "I'm too old to enjoy girlfriends, too old to do this or that. What can I do?" And then I gave her a hint, because she's 76. So I said, "Anyway, I'm just one step away from the grave. I'm almost dead." She said, "Don't say that. Don't say that." I said, "Yes, I'm almost dead. I can die at any moment." No, you're perfectly healthy. You're looking fine. You're going to have a long life." I said, "No, any moment I'm going to die. What's the point in me just, changing my life just for some money? I can't even enjoy with the money." So, then she said that, "Well, I and your aunts and uncles will just continue praying for you." I said, "Yes, I am also praying for you." So this kind of talk gets fatiguing. And particularly when there's no Krishna Prasad around, your tongue really just gets like, becomes like a desert. You should never take prasad for granted. To taste food that's offered to the Lord with devotion is the antiseptic for the contamination of material life. It cures you of your contamination. Otherwise, the tongue is attracted to do so many crazy things. Now, we take an interest in Shonaka inquiring about Vidura and Maitreya. Shonaka Rishi is not an ordinary person. Vidura and Maitreya are not ordinary persons. So we're eager to know, what are they talking about? As stated here, there must have been many narrations of the spotless pastimes of the Lord. That had to be so. That had to be the case, because look at the persons who are involved. If you want to know what a conversation is going to be like, look at the persons who are making that conversation. Similarly, if you want to judge the persons, listen to their conversation. You know, people are always judging devotees by their conversation. Did you know that? First, they look at you, and they see, most of these guys look really peaceful. A few spacers, but most of them look pretty peaceful. And then they listen to what you say. They hear that you're just not talking in a self-projecting way all the time. So you can judge someone by their conversation, and vice versa. You can judge what the conversation will be by taking into account the persons who are going to talk. It's very practical. Therefore, when you're around mundane persons, you know the conversation is going to be very fatiguing. You know that in advance. Those who are distributing books, on the one hand, it looks like they're engaging in some mundane conversation, but their purpose is 100% for Krishna's pleasure. Therefore, they're not touched by the contamination of the situation. They're simply thinking how to get this person to take the medicine by being a bit friendly, empathy, talking a little bit about subjects that people are interested in according to their contaminated senses. But the book distributor is always thinking how to give the medicine. And it is true that any topic you're interested in is covered in Srimad Bhagavatam. It is true. The hearing of such narrations is exactly like bathing in the water of the Ganges, for it can free one from all sinful reactions. Just by hearing about Krishna, your sinful reactions are cleansed. And that should be a concern for everyone. Because living in the material world means accumulating sinful reactions which cause your suffering. In Nectar Devotion, Rupa Goswami describes the four phases of sinful reactions, from very dormant to starting to manifest to sprouting, and then to fully manifest. Mature sinful reactions manifest in the form of disease or suffering situations in this world. So it's not that someone is seeing the full stock of their sinful reactions in their present suffering. No, there's a whole stock that's unmanifest, waiting for the right time to develop, to appear. That's what happens with children. People like young children. They like little children. Part of the reason you like little children is because they seem so innocent. Isn't that so? So innocent, fresh. No, it's all an illusion. And the illusion is shattered when the kid becomes a teenager. Then you just, what to do. The same parents who were so fascinated by their children when they were little, they just pull their hair when their child becomes a teenager, 12 or 13 years old. And the child doesn't listen to you anymore, doesn't respect you. Sometimes even devotees go into the spiritual equivalent of teenage years, in which they think, wow, wait a minute, I've been a devotee for 5 or 10 years now. I know what I'm doing. I don't need to take any guidance. The children are not innocent. They have the seeds of sinful reactions in them, and these seeds are just waiting for the right time to sprout. It's just a question of time. Time, the effect of time, causes sinful reactions to manifest throughout your life. So there's no such thing as an innocent child. And all the pretense of innocence is finished when the child hits 12 or 13. when the hormones change, then everyone completely turns into a monster. And then the parents either pull their hair, what to do, oh. Or else, in New Zealand, they just, of course, accept it as part of the glories of life. And they'll just ask you to live with your girlfriend or boyfriend at home. Did you know that? Yeah, did you know that? Now, here, yes, it's considered enlightened. Why? You're 13, 14, you have a boyfriend or girlfriend, why should you be sneaky? Why should you, you know, hide out in town and do your affairs? The parents say, just bring him home. He can live in your room. Be part of the family. Yes. You didn't know that? Oh, it's quite normal. They all know. It's all part of life here. It's considered enlightened parenting. Yes. Once you learn to see the stock of sinful reactions, then you lose your naivete about life. Ignorance doesn't allow you to see. People say what you don't know won't hurt you, but that is not a fact. What you don't know will hurt you. Krishna consciousness is the process of acquiring knowledge so you can see, and then you won't be victimized by material nature. The stock of sinful reactions, how are you going to purify it? People don't care about that. If all day long you're out in Manners Mall and person after person you ask, are you concerned with cleansing your stock of sinful reactions? Who would care? Pia, can you imagine in Sweden asking people, are you concerned about your stock of sinful reactions? What is sin? There's no sin. The only sin is when you don't satisfy yourself. That is a sin. Sin means neglecting yourself and your desires. That is sin. People even glorify sin. That's what some popular perfume called My Sin. Yes? Any of you ever use that? You've heard of it? Yes, it's called My Sin. You know, like, it's your private indiscretion. Your private fall down, you know. Very exotic. My Sin. Because it's yours and no one knows. Yes, it's glorified. Sometimes I've heard when something, how do you say, it's very appealing to the material senses. I've heard people say, whoa, that's sinful. You ever heard that before? In what situation? A big chocolate cake. What else? A skateboarder would do some fancy trick. Any else? A new dress or something like that? Yeah? You, oh, that's sinful! I mean, it's so good! The idea is that anything that's really good has to be sinful. All the good stuff in this world is sinful. That's the idea. And the purpose of religion is to stop you from having fun. Because all the nice things are sinful. What's another one? Wicked? Yes? Oh, it's wicked. It means it's got to be good. They say something like that in Spanish?
Yes.
Yeah, what is the word?
It's really Islam, so.
Huh? It's vulgar, huh?
Oh.
In French also, Sophie? What do they say? Hmm? Oh, you're becoming too purified. You can't remember now. What do they speak in Moldova? They speak Moldovan? Or it was a dialect of Russian or something? Like Romanian? Oh. So what do they say? Huh? No one wants to say that. So this is Kali Yuga, when the most perverse things are glorified. Therefore, no one cares about their sinful reactions. Krishna makes the offer at the end of Bhagavad Gita. Sarvatarman puchyaja mamekam sharanam raja. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo. Sarva papa. All your sinful reactions. Krishna says, I'll take care of them. You don't worry. Ma sucha. Mokshayishami ma sucha. You don't worry. I'll free you from sarva papa. All the sinful reactions. Who cares? No one cares. Sinful reactions. What's that? Just live your life as you feel. Be true and honest according to your standards. In this way, people immerse themselves in the darkness of ignorance, not knowing they have to pay a price for everything they do. That's why a devotee feels such regret when he or she thinks back to the non-devotional life lived. You feel, oh my goodness, how could I have done such things? And I have to get the reactions. And you just remember what you did in this life. So gleefully, joyfully getting intoxicated. So gleefully, joyfully sharing your bodies with anyone. Oh, not anyone, Maharaj. It wasn't anyone. That's what they all say. We did know the guy or girl for 3 days before. Why are you exaggerating? It wasn't anyone. It's horrible. And yes, there are reactions. But by performing devotional service, in fact, simply by the devotional service of hearing about Krishna's activities, hearing the conversations between Vidura and Maitreya, the sinful reactions are cleansed. You don't know any other conversations that have that potency. No mundane conversation has the potency to cleanse sinful reactions. But just by hearing what Vidura and Maitreya are talking about, your sinful reactions are cleansed. And it is those sinful reactions that cause all the problems. What is the use in people blaming God that there was a huge tsunami and 300,000 people are killed? Why don't they blame sinful reactions? No, no one thinks that way. They just think, how could there be a God who allowed such a huge wave? That huge wave, its destruction, is the product of sinful reactions. How to be protected against sinful reactions. How to cleanse your past sinful reactions. An intelligent person is concerned about that. I told you about the person from Auckland who was in the tsunami. Maybe it was Christchurch. I told you that. Yes, he was diving. Right. He was underwater, diving. And then he looked at his depth gauge and saw suddenly the depth increased to 20 meters. Increased by 20 meters. What's going on? He came up and looked at the beach and saw complete devastation. The wave had just passed over his head while he was under the water. So that is how a devotee survives the Kali Yuga. You let all the contamination just go over your head because you're deeply absorbed in hearing and chanting about Krishna. Such conversations have this potency. Therefore, these conversations are compared to the Ganges River. In a truly civilized society, just comparing something to the Ganges River would be very meaningful, because everyone knew. Everyone in a civilized society knows that the Ganges River purifies. But, of course, in a barbarian society, no one knows that. How can a river purify someone of sinful reactions? First of all, there's no sinful reactions. Secondly, even if there were, what could a river do about it? Just like you're a meteorologist. Suppose you went around telling your fellow meteorologists, you know, there are rivers that can purify consciousness. They would just laugh. Don't bring these folk tales into your job, please. Rivers are rivers, consciousness is consciousness. What do the two have to do with each other? Of course, they don't understand consciousness. So how can they say that it's not possible for a river to purify consciousness? Because of the origin of the Ganges River, from the lotus feet of the Lord, it purifies. Yes, when you all went to Vrindavan, did you go into the Yamuna? Did it feel like an ordinary river? Even a former hard skeptic like Guruvani noticed, wait a minute, this is something different, right? It affected your consciousness, didn't it? You're also there, Vishnu Maya? You went in the Yamuna? You can see this is different, yes? The river is affecting your consciousness. For the ordinary person in India, they very much rely upon bathing in the Ganges or the Yamuna to purify their sinful reactions. Of course, for devotees, everything in their daily schedule is purifying sinful reactions. Just by your sitting down and hearing the conversations between Vidura and Maitreya, your stock of sinful reactions is being purified. Then you may ask, why is it that devotees have to apparently suffer sickness, accidents? That's the way of this world. Apparently from the outside, the devotee is suffering. But actually, from the inside, Krishna is reciprocating with the devotee. The example given, the cat. When the cat holds a rat in its mouth and when it holds a kitten in the mouth, it looks the same from the outside point of view. But the two creatures in the mouth of the cat are feeling completely different experiences. The rat doesn't experience the same thing in the mouth of the cat as the kitten does. The kitten's feeling maternal love, and the rat is feeling terror. So from the external point of view, it seems that both the devotee and the non-devotee are suffering. But from the internal perspective, the worlds are completely different. The experiences are completely different. Krishna never promises us that this body will not suffer. Body is an instrument meant for suffering. The material world is a place meant for suffering. It's not that just because you become a devotee that your body will not give you problems. The world will not give your body and mind problems. That's just the nature of having a body and the nature of living in this world. But Krishna promises you that your spiritual life will not be vanquished. Your relationship with him in bhakti will not be destroyed. That is the point. When Krishna has Arjuna declare in Bhagavad Gita, Konteya Pratijanihi Name Bhakta Pranashyati, declare it boldly, Arjuna, my devotee will never be vanquished. That doesn't apply to your body. It doesn't apply to the material world. It applies to your bhakti. So please understand that. When you hear about Krishna, Krishna is present. Because Anything in relation to Krishna also gives you the presence of Krishna. Therefore, by associating with Bhagavad Gita, you're associating with Krishna. This principle, you must understand. How things in relation to the Lord are on the spiritual platform. Just like yesterday, we were talking in depth about relationships. If the relationship, if the family is in relation to Krishna, with Krishna in the center, then even the family is on the transcendental platform. Therefore, a devotee's quest is always how to keep Krishna in the center. Whether you're single or married, how to keep Krishna in the center so that all persons involved will be on the transcendental platform. As Srila Prabhupada writes here, if we can dovetail all our activities in relationship with Krishna, then we do not stand on the material platform, but always on the spiritual platform. This is our quest in life. This is our true career. How to keep everything in our life in relationship with Krishna. As soon as the relationship between our activities and our life and Krishna starts to break down, then we're no longer on the spiritual platform. In this way, bhakti yoga is dynamic. It's the constant living, breathing process for keeping everything connected to Krishna. The true ecological the true ecological cycle in this world is that Krishna gives and we return to Krishna. Just like the clouds the clouds take water, or clouds are simply formed by water from the ocean, and then the clouds go over dry land and drop the water on the land. And then the water goes to the rivers, and the rivers flow back into the ocean. That's a natural cycle. Similarly, the deepest natural cycle is that everything comes from Krishna, and the devotee returns it to Krishna by engaging it in Krishna's service. When that happens, then there is peace and prosperity. Otherwise, no. We'll go to the next verse. Tana kirtaya bhadram te kirtan yodhara kanmanaha rasagyatko nitripyeta hari lilamritang pivan. O Sutta Goswami, all good fortune to you. Please narrate the activities of the Lord, which are all magnanimous and worth glorifying. What sort of devotee can be satiated by hearing the nectarian pastimes of the Lord? Purport. The narration of the pastimes of the Lord, which are always enacted on the transcendental platform, should be received with all respect by devotees. Those who are actually on the transcendental platform are never satiated by hearing the continuous narration of the pastimes of the Lord. For example, if any self-realized souls read from Bhagavad Gita, he will never feel satiated. The narrations of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam may be read thousands and thousands of times, and still, without fail, new aspects of the subject matter will be relished by the devotee. So this is what I would like that you all experience. So it's not that we insist that you focus on Prabhupada's books for some kind of sectarian reason. We insist, first of all, because that is the instruction of Srila Prabhupada, that you master his books, and also because I would like that you all get the experience of being able to read Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar Devotion, Krishna Book again and again, even thousands of times, and then you just see deeper and deeper, newer and newer aspects. Once you get that experience, then I know that you are properly situated. Therefore, this verse says here, what sort of devotee can be satiated by hearing the nectarian pastimes of the Lord? No real devotee can ever be tired about hearing Krishna's activities. So if you're actually on the transcendental platform, you'll never be tired by hearing Krishna's pastimes. You'll never feel satiated. Never say, oh, that's enough. I've heard that before. So I'd like that you all experience that. Then it will be obvious that you're on the spiritual platform. That is a very accurate test that you can go on hearing about Krishna thousands of times and it's ever fresh. So I'd like that you all have that experience. Otherwise, if you have this feeling that, oh, I've read Krishna book twice, that's enough. Now I need something new to read. It means you're turning away from the challenge. You're denying the inheritance that should be yours. That inheritance is the opportunity to hear about Krishna again and again. And apparently, it's the same thing, but you hear it with completely fresh ears every time. I would like that you all get that mature experience, and then you'll be solidly situated in your spiritual life. Otherwise, so many devotees, they just like to jump around this book, that book, this book, that book. That's even just Krishna conscious literature. But they never get this experience of reading Bhagavad Gita for the thousandth time and saying, wow, I'll never get to the bottom of this. That experience is very much necessary. Reading the Bhagavatam for the thousandth time and just saying, so much is here, it's so fresh. Reading Chaitanya Charitamrita for the thousandth time, and each time it's like a new experience. When you get to that stage, then you know you're actually situated on the spiritual platform. But many devotees don't give themselves the chance to do that. They either say, oh, I read Prabhupada's books once, twice, that's enough. Now I need something new, something else. Or, not even I need something new or something else, but there's no need for me to read at all. We are not fanatics. We say that your main meal is Srila Prabhupada's books. Don't ever let anything take the place of the main meal. If you have read the main meal once, twice, three times, then you can add some a la carte on the side, you know, to satisfy your curiosity. But always remember what the main meal is, so that you will get this experience, just like the sages in Naimasaranya are saying, Bhadram te, O Sutta Goswami, all good fortune to you. Because he's going to tell them Krishna's activities, the activities of Krishna's devotees. And they know, the sages at Naimasaranya know, will not be satiated, will not be tired of hearing this. Let us hear it a thousand times again and again and still will never be tired. Can you imagine what you can hear in mundane existence a thousand times and never be tired of it? Maybe you had your favorite song, your favorite music. Could you hear it a thousand times and each time it's ever fresh? No. Therefore, it may be hard for you to believe that it's possible with Krishna Katha. because you're comparing your mundane experiences to the experiences of the spiritual realm. Maybe you've had the experience of you're driving in the car, and then you hear your favorite song from 15 years ago. Yes, this happened to everyone. So momentarily you get a sense of joy, and then it's over. But you would never say, play it again 1,000 times. No. You just relish it temporarily. Then it's gone. How many of you had a CD of your favorite song and you played it 1,000 times, one after another? I remember in university, everyone was really into music then. It was nothing like it is now. It was much more intense. This is during the days of so many big musicians. So every student would have his song that would, he'd say, this is what gets me through the day. He'd wake up in the morning, 11 a.m., to go to class, And every student had his fancy stereo system, and immediately, as soon as you woke up, you just, put on your favorite song, and that's how you take bath. You take bath, bathed by the sound of your favorite song. And while the favorite song is playing, you just throw on your clothes and grab your notebook and go out to class, armed with your morning program, fortified. Favorite song. Any of you did like that in school? No. This is back in those days when everyone was so affected by music completely. And we thought it was always going to be like that. But no, it's not like that now. So we could have never put on the same song 1,000 times. And in fact, we always thought that, this is the way it's going to be the rest of our life. We're just going to be listening to these songs. But it was never like that. After a few months, forget it. And you were thinking, when is the musician going to put out a new CD? A new album, as it was then. When does the new album come out? And you were so happy when the new album came. Wow. And then when these great heroes suddenly died of an overdose, then we were all brokenhearted. Oh, no. No more new albums. Oh, no. Then we play the old albums again and again in memory of the departed great soul. And finally you get tired of that. This is why people can't understand how it is that we're really satisfied chanting Hare Krishna. Just three words, Hare Krishna and Rama. I told you before, we're having a Harinam party in some university town in the USA. And the Harinam party was marching through the city. It was Indianapolis, Indiana, I think. No, it was Bloomington, Illinois. University of Illinois. Big school, like 70,000 students. So we were just going through the town chanting. And then one student was watching on the corner. He watched us. And then we moved on. And then we came back to that spot. And he happened to be walking by in that same spot where he saw us 2 hours ago. And then he just said, I can't believe it. I saw you 2 hours ago. And now here you are, and you're still singing the same song. I can't believe it. What's with you guys? 2 hours, the same song. In other words, he's expressing, you can't be satisfied that way. You have to change your song. Even if it could be your favorite song, you can't just sing it 2 hours straight. Just think, in your Maya days, if your favorite musician, played your favorite song. You were at a live concert. You had a front row seat. I used to do like that. I would get front row seats for all the great acharyas. Because I was a New York City boy, so, you know, it's all possible. So there you are. And, you know, and then the musician plays your favorite song. If it was within your power, and you could say, play it again, play it again. You played it again. Then, play it again, play it again. Play it again. Play it again, play it again. No, after four times, you just say, oh, okay, okay. That's enough. And that's your favorite song. But Hare Krishna, hearing about Krishna, we can just go on and on and on. And not only is there pleasure, but the sinful reactions are being destroyed. And it is the sinful reactions that are causing the trouble in life. Try to see this world as simply the manifestation of sinful reactions in due course of time. No, instead you see progress, you see technological innovation, but you don't see the mature fructification of sinful activity. You don't see that. So the Bhagavatam is actually teaching you how to see reality. All right, any questions? How that's worked out is over time. And also, for a devotee, Krishna gives you minimized sinful reactions. Karmani nidahati kintu chavakti bhajam govindamadi purusham tamaham vajami. Krishna personally gives you something which is much less than what you are due. He gives you a little something just to keep you honest so you don't become foolish thinking, oh, I can enjoy material life now, all my sinful reactions are gone. Krishna gives you a tiny little bit so that you realize the nature of this world and don't forget it. So, at the time of initiation, it officially marks that point when Krishna, by way of the spiritual master, accepts your sinful reactions. Then, you know the example about the electric fan? The fan is off. The plug has been taken out of the power point, but due to the momentum, the fan is turning, but it's slowing down. So that's what goes on. Initiation marks the formal time when the plug is yanked. But actually, as soon as anyone hears about Krishna, talks about Krishna, action is there. Cleansing action is there. But just the time of initiation marks that formal point. But as soon as the tongue touches the holy name, there's an effect for anyone. But at the time of initiation, everything is very formal. It's like you formally enrolled in the university. Just like now we're discussing, I was discussing with Hesu what courses she'll take. She's about to start the school year. So now we're discussing. But then there's going to actually come a time when she signs up for the course, right? She was thinking she'd sign up for Korean. I said, come on, Hazel, that's stretching it a bit, you know? A Korean going to the University of New Zealand to study Korean. I don't know how well that would go over to your parents, you know. I said also, you know, if you're going to go to university, you might as well take something that's not difficult, doesn't require a lot of, you know, hard labor, but at the same time, it may have some bearing on your future. I said, you know, in the future, you probably, you know, have a family and like that. And so then, you know, as a Grihastha hustler, you have to think about economic support, right? Yes, it's true, right? So, I mean, you know, what's the use of a Korean going to university to study Korean? It's like you going to university to study Moldovan language, you know? What is the point, you know? So it's not the most important thing, but since you're going to go to the university, study something that may have some value for your future, economic future. Pick something that's not too entangling. So she thought and said, well, linguistics is easy for me. She went to a high school in Korea that specialized in foreign languages, and she had already studied elementary Japanese. So I said, okay, then study Japanese. That way you know three languages, English, Korean, Japanese. You know, employers like that, you know. Yes, yourself, yes. If you're fluent in three languages that are very dominant in Asia, the languages that are dominant are English, Chinese, Japanese, Korean. So if she knows three out of those four, then she can, if necessary, she can get some job as a translator or, you know, something like that, airlines representative. Or of course, she's thinking like young 19-year-old girl, family, marriage, never. I said, oh, well, just hold on now. So, in any case, who knows? She may be one of the rare ones who just wants to make sankirtan all her life. It does happen, but still, she should have this insurance policy. Since she's already going to school, might as well do something that's not entangling. Because she was saying if she has to write papers in English, it's too entangling. Because her written knowledge of English doesn't cover all the idiomatic expressions. So she wants to spend most of her time doing devotional service here at the Core Yoga Center. So I said, okay, pick something that is not entangling, it's not too intense, but at the same time it may have some value for your future career, in case that happens. Who knows what the future will be? All we know is that we want that your future is connected to Krishna. But what the details of the future life are going to be, we can't say. But at least, I said, if you're going to school now, study something that may have some bearing on the future, practically. And it's not too hard, not too difficult. I asked her, doesn't the university say something to you? Like, hey, what are you doing studying Korean? And you're Korean, you know? What are you just doing? So, no, they don't care. Just pay your money and take the course. Could care less. Especially because the people from outside New Zealand have to pay, what, double, triple the price? Triple. Okay, you're from Korea. You know Korean perfectly, but you still want to study Korean? Come on, no problem. Anything else? Yes?
Heard like you mentioned that we use our time to achieve that possibility. And I was wondering how many possibilities have that contamination and creature. And what to do about that?
Yes, you have to separate your desire to feel accepted from the desire to preach. I'm going to show my superiority. That's my objection about what happens at many temples when new people come there. Immediately, some devotee, you know, just wants to show how much knowledge he has. And they just overload the person. Do you know who the 10th avatar is? You don't know, huh? Do you know the difference between the Mahatattva and the Pradhan? You don't know, huh? You don't know, huh? Have you ever seen it? What happens when there's a room full of Hare Krishnas and there's one guest there? Immediately all the devotees often just make that person feel like, you know, you don't know anything. We're talking about stuff you don't understand. So that's one reason why I designed these kind of preaching situations, to get around that thing, that problem. You know, a room full of devotees can be very intimidating. People just like... Because devotees are very powerful, and also often devotees want to let you know they're very powerful. We know, you don't know. I've seen in temples, a new person comes, as soon as they walk in the door, pay your obeisances, this is how you do it, you bow down. Now we're going to have Bhagavatam class, sit here on the floor and hear about Krishna. And the whole point of the preaching is to, you know, show your superiority. We are the devotees, you are the karmis. You ever seen situations like this? I have. Yes, you have. It's all sense of you. You're on our home field now. We're the kings here. Outside the door, you're in charge, but inside the temple, we're in charge. We're going to make you feel insignificant. We are the devotees, and you are the karmi. So you have to watch that. You have to watch that you are not using preaching for an excuse to project yourself as being great and a know-it-all. And don't mix in feelings of inadequacy from material life. That's one thing that those doing the service of initiating devotees have to be careful about. Don't accept disciples to help you feel wanted and appreciated. You know, you're surrounded by all the little kids. Oh, Gurudev, Jai, you're my everything. Oh. Of course, it is the disciple's duty to speak in that way. But if you start really mixing in a desire to feel appreciated, then your position becomes compromised. Let me accept a lot of disciples so I have a lot of appreciators. Yes. I have 1,000 people around me who are just glorifying me. Now I really feel wanted. That's the beginning of fall down. You always have to think, these are Krishna's servants, and it's my service to train these servants of Krishna. They're actually better devotees than me. I just have this service of training them. They don't realize their full potential yet. The spiritual master always has to remember that I'm doing a service on behalf of Krishna. It's a very serious service. How am I going to deliver Krishna consciousness, understanding God? We are dealing with the most serious thing. You always have to think, how is everything I say and do going to increase someone's Krishna consciousness? Even you may be joking or chastising or whatever, you always think, how is this going to increase the person's Krishna consciousness? So yes, there is a possibility that we can mix in feelings of inadequacy into our preaching. I want to feel wanted. I want people to notice me. I want people to think nice of me. Therefore, I'll preach. No one noticed me before. No one ever thought I was anything before. Now I'm a preacher. I'm a Sankirtan devotee. You have to watch that. Don't use devotional service to fulfill your inadequacies. Use devotional service to satisfy Krishna. Automatically you'll be satisfied. Yes. Books that are more appropriate? What do you mean by that? Read them all over and over again. They're all appropriate. By reading them over and over again, gradually you'll be able to see that. You thought you knew what they were talking about the first times you read them, but actually you didn't. And it'll always go on like that, because it's a spiritual subject matter. It'll always increase in its relevance. So as I said, that is the experience I'd like everyone to have, that it's a bottomless pit, reading Prabhupada's books. And then you can give that experience to others. Otherwise, without this practical realization, you might think this is just some kind of fanaticism or sectarianism. No, there's a point to it all. A practical point of your getting the taste. And then you're able to give that to others. Then you become a very powerful book distributor, preacher, cultivator. Because you've tasted this experience yourself, you can give it to others. Like Celia, she's 14 now. How old were you when you started reading? 11. So hopefully she goes on like this year after year. By the time she's 30, she'll be very powerful. She'll be able to say, I've been reading these books over and over since I was 11. I just can't get enough of them. And people will really be impressed. You have to think of the future, your future development in bhakti. Build for the future. Taste for today and build for the future taste also. That is bhakti. I'm so happy that you all have the opportunity to learn so many things in Krishna's service. Everyone here learns how to cook, can learn how to play musical instruments, learning how to do so many activities. It's like so many of you ask me what to do. And some of you I may tell, just do everything, because I know you have that capacity. Hey, Sue asked me that, and Anja asked me that. So just do everything. Learn everything. We didn't have this opportunity, so many of us, in the early days, because it was an emergency situation, and you had to do the necessary. So I never learned how to cook. So build for the future. Learn everything in Krishna's service. Of course, there was a time when I could make knockout halava, because when I was traveling underground in Eastern Europe in the 70s and 80s, the only thing we would serve at programs was halava, papadams, and a nectar drink made from yogurt. So I used to know how to make knockout halava. I don't remember now, though. Maybe I should try again one day.
I just read in the title book that if one wishes to benefit his fellow brother, he wants to awaken his relinquishment of consciousness. So it's like.
One wants to benefit who?
His fellow brother, he wants to awaken his.
Fellow brother?
Yeah.
What's a fellow brother?
I just mean a person, not a person.
Okay, yeah.
So, like, to desire liberation itself is not what a devotee should do, ideally, to desire liberation.
Why, you desire liberation?
Yeah, so if you desire liberation so that you can help others, like Christian consciousness, so that you can set a better example, is that, like, how should we see?
What do you mean by liberation?
Just like one of the stages of liberation.
Huh?
Just some kind of stage of spiritual.
What do you mean by that?
Realization.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah, is it still a selfish desire if you desire that stage so that you can preach for the benefit of others?
But you're, from the beginning, dealing with Bhagavan realization. That includes Paramatma realization and Brahman realization. You started off dealing with the whole thing.
But then it comes like one after the other.
You started with the whole thing because you're following Lord Chaitanya. He gave you everything all at once. You've got the mango in your hand. It's just not ripe. Soon it'll become ripe.
So it's selfish to desire liberation.
What do you mean by liberation? Generally, when people say liberation, they mean freedom from material misery. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Why did you say that? In the beginning, it's all right to have that desire. We're not going to throw you out the door because you desire freedom from material suffering. But as you progress in bhakti, your desire will become more that you simply want to satisfy Krishna. If you want to help others, then pray to Krishna that you can become his instrument. Whether you're in the material world or not. But again, if you say, oh, I just want to get out of material existence, that's okay. We're not going to throw you out the door. Just be aware of what real bhakti is. As Lord Chaitanya explains in the last verse of Shikshastrika, Ashlishava Paravatam Panashtumam Adarshanam Marmahatam Karotuva. Ashlisha. Krishna, by your embrace, you can make me happy. Adarshanam. Then again, you can disappear from my presence. You cannot give me darshan. Adarshanam. Marmahatam. In this way, make me brokenhearted. Karut. It doesn't matter. You're still mat prananata. You're the Lord of my life unconditionally. That's the highest standard of bhakti. In this way, Lord Chaitanya is presenting the feelings of Srimati Radharani. We should be aware of that and make progress to that point. But if we say, how many here want to freedom from material misery, and you raise your hands, we're not going to criticize you. You understand? It's like when you ask a child, what do you want to be when you grow up? The child says, I want to be a fireman. Any of you ever said that? Huh? I want to be a policeman. You don't criticize the child. Oh, no, they have better jobs than that. None of you ever said anything like that? You wanted to be a what? Detective. In a laboratory? Wear the regular clothes?
No, like, here's a crime, and then analyze why the murderer did what they did. And
anyway. So, no one would criticize you when you were a little girl and you said, I want to be that, a criminologist or whatever they're called. No one criticized you, right? They said, oh, it's nice. She's a little girl. She has aspirations to be a part of society. But people expected that as you became older, you would have, you know, other desires as you became mature. My mother, as I told you before, when I was 8, she would always go to a bookshop and get me all these books, you know, meant for children. Your future as a chemical engineer, your future as an investment banker. She'd come home with a big stack of books, you know. This is life in the USA, really high powered, you know. So she'd come with a big stack of books. Your future is this, your future is that. She would tell me, go to the library, get more books like this. See what you want to be. So I would just read all these books, because I would read anything. I would study phone books, encyclopedias, anything. She told me when I was 2-year-old baby, I kept crawling up some bookshelf trying to drag books out of the shelf. So, she would, you know, try to program me that way. And then the relatives would come over for the, you know, the holidays. And so, have you decided yet? What do you want to be? You know how our family is. We like success. So they would say like that. And I was just 8 years old. I said, oh, I want to be an investment banker. And they would say, oh, very good, very good. They would turn to my mother and smile all around. Very good. You're training your children so nicely. I would just read one little book, you know, meant for kids, Your Future as an Investment Banker. And I would, oh, yeah, that's what I want to be. For a while, it was chemical engineer. I would tell everyone, I want to be a chemical engineer. Because later it turned out I was lousy in science and math. But, you know, it was just a nice thing to say. I want to be a chemical engineer. No one criticized. The only thing my mother did that she stopped was the Lutheran Church. I was going to a Lutheran school between 5 and 8. The Lutheran Church told my mother when I was 8. She told me this. Just promise he'll become a priest and we'll pay for his whole education all his life. My mother thought, well, that's a little too much. We're a very religious family, but, you know. No one ever asked me, but I, you know, I was just 8 year old. She just, no one asked me, do you want to be a Lutheran priest? So anyway, when you're young and immature, you say so many things. No one criticizes, they just expect that you get older. So when you're older, in Krishna consciousness, you have more mature desires. If you actually become purified, follow the process properly. But in the beginning, everyone thinks to get free from suffering, that is the highest thing. Gradually, though, you find out that there's something even beyond that. So that will happen to you in time, especially if you go on distributing books. Real devotion is to think, let me distribute books again in my next life. Whether I go back to Godhead or not is not important. But it takes some time to actually feel that way. Someone who preaches Krishna consciousness is actually already back to Godhead. That is the point. But in the beginning, you know, you have so many immature desires. It's okay. We don't criticize. We're not going to say, you just want to go back to Godhead. You want to be free from material suffering. We're putting you on the blacklist. Yeah. It's not like that. It's the process of the unripe mango gradually becoming ripe in terms of desires that are more and more simply for Krishna's pleasure. And then the advisors, the spiritual master, they're already always there to give you guidance, how to shape your desires. I think I told you also when I was, what, maybe I was 14, and I was, you know, manifesting the usual inclinations for curiosity, teenage curiosity about the opposite sex. So then my mother and my uncles and aunts, they always kind of steer various young girls, you know, who they approved of, you know, in my direction, you know. She's from a good Christian family. She's very intelligent, yeah. They would always say, like, with a twinkle in their eye, you know, I was just 14. Don't you want to talk to so-and-so, you know, after church next week? I was very shy. I would just, yeah. They didn't have to pride me. Don't you? Come on. Yeah. She's from a very good family, very nice Christian home. And she's very career motivated. It's really intense. All this is going on. You're just 13 or 14, you know? So I remember once my uncle pulled me aside, you know? And he, you know, he gave me the Divya Gan. He said, you know, son, family, the Todds. You know, when it comes to picking a partner, we really believe in good genes. In other words, just marry someone smart, successful, continue the family line. They're really intense. So just like in material life, people are trying to give guidance, simply in material. In spiritual life, we need guidance. And through good guidance, desires change. Through good association, desires change. All right. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.